Hello, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite satirical podcast. It's your boy, Day.
And I am David, and together we are Call Me Limbo. So today we have a variety of things we want to talk about. First, I didn't tell you this before we started recording, but I was reading my horoscope because normally I'm just a whore, but like the horoscope, it came through like my news subscription that I get. And my horoscope for today, it said, important discussions might be happening. So I am anticipating that this is going to be an important discussion.
Certainly. And I agree.
Yes.
I'm excited because, you know, we have hopefully some great updates to tell you all really, really soon. I'm trying to expand and bring you guys lots of different things and different guests, etc. So keep us uplifted. We're excited. I feel like this week has been wild, from Republican primaries to canceled debates now, and people dropping out of the race, people overperforming, people underperforming. Then we have all the other things going on that I'm sure you want to talk about. So I'm really excited to get into this one.
Yeah. So what happened with the Iowa caucuses?
So Donald J. Trump, the big question with Donald was whether or not he would be able, how we knew he was going to win, but by how big of a margin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the assumption was he needed to get 50% or greater to really exert and show his dominance on the race. And that was important. But then it was also who was number two and how well would they perform? So Donald Trump got, I believe it was 50.1%. So he did, it was just an overwhelming turnout in bad weather, might I add, in Iowa. I hate how their system works. They'll show up and do the sitting thing or whatever they do, or stand. But yes, he won overwhelmingly, much to the surprise of many. Ron DeSantis, he came in at number two. What was interesting about Ron coming in at number two was it wasn't a, you know, some big blowout or anything that was, I would argue it didn't necessarily shift the race much, because he still almost lost by like 30 percentage points to Donald Trump. He was in the low 20s. I apologize. I don't have the exact.
Yeah, number. It's 21.2% is what the New York Times is reporting.
Yep. Yeah. And then Nikki Haley came in right at his heels at around 19%. And the interesting thing is a lot of people were talking about, oh, Nikki underperformed, when that was weird to me because it was never projected for Nikki to win Iowa. Her biggest, you know, gusto, I think had she won, it would have been a big story for her. But the gust of win they're hoping for is New Hampshire, where she is polling pretty well. And Ron DeSantis is polling poorly. Vivek Ramaswamy, he definitely did not win. He was less than 10%. I think it was like 8%. And he did drop out that night and endorse Donald Trump. Of course, you know, if nothing else he's going to do is talk about how great Trump was. And then I don't know if you saw that whole push he was trying to do, like, I think something bad might happen to Trump, so that's why you should vote for me instead. It was really weird. And Trump was like, don't fall for that. Vote for me. It was crazy. So my whole thing, I guess my questions at this point, do you even think it's likely that someone could have that much of a surge in New Hampshire? But then what does this really, the results and the just the strong performance of Trump, what do you think that means going into 2024?
I'm not surprised by the Iowa results either. I think that having grown up in a rural area and spent time in a rural area and talked to a lot of people in rural areas, people still really believe that Donald Trump is their guy. Now, being in a city, a lot of the more conservative leaning people that I know here in the cities are not really Donald Trump people. They're kind of Lincoln Project people. And so, yeah. And so I think that Nikki Haley is more palatable. And so I'm curious when we look at something like the Electoral College, where like land basically votes instead of people, where I think that like the larger population centers, someone like Nikki Haley is going to do better than Donald Trump.
Well, what was interesting is that, you know, she did win one of the counties. It was kind of like the Elizabeth Warren County she won. Trump won 98 out of the 99.
Wow.
But what was interesting is that, if I'm not mistaken, she underperformed in the college educated bracket. Like, she did get some, but like, considering that's her main base, she like really needed to solidify them. And it seemed like she did not reach that threshold that they were hoping for. They just said it seems like a lot of, like, Nikki was somebody that they would, yeah, okay. But there wasn't any enthusiasm for her in the same vein as like Donald Trump. And so I try to tell people all the time, like, I see so many posts about, you know, I can't believe y'all are voting for Trump or blah, blah, blah. I said, people who love Donald Trump are going to vote for him. There's nothing at this point, there's nothing you can do to stop that. And every attack that you make, you take at him, only makes him stronger. I said, what you should be focused on is forcing people, is providing the providing material difference and change for the American people, showing them that there's a reason that they should vote for you. But instead of doing that, it's like, oh, Trump bad, January 6th, abortion. And it's like, wow, it'd be really nice if you actually offered people a reason to vote. I really do think they will lose if people stay home.
I think so, too. So I was just looking to the county that Nikki Haley won was Johnson County in Iowa, which is where Iowa City is located, which is where the University of Iowa is located, which is not far from where I went to school, which is a very, very progressive part of Iowa. So I think that my theory or conspiracy still kind of holds. In a more progressive area, I think that there is more of an appetite for someone like Nikki Haley. So, but that also, to me, I also saw an article pop up today. Full disclosure, I didn't read it. I just read the headline that said, does Joe Biden have a chance in New Hampshire? And so I know that, I believe you had shared with me that there's a write-in campaign for Joe Biden because he's not actually on the ballot. But I think that that gives someone like Marianne Williamson a real chance to like jump out in front and say, like, I'm the front runner as soon as the primary happens. And so I'm still sticking by my prediction last week that it's going to be a Marianne Williamson versus Nikki Haley general election. That's still that's still my prediction. So we will see.
What's wild, though, so there's two things I want to talk about. Joe Biden is trying to do like some campaigning, quote unquote, now in New Hampshire, which is wild because remember they said, oh, this doesn't even count. Why are you guys having this? But now it seems as though they are trying to focus on New Hampshire a little bit because they want to make sure that this write-in campaign, which is wild to me. Mm-hmm. Is going to happen. And that I see an article from, it looks like Yahoo News, but it says Y News. Y Entertainment. Biden is not competing in New Hampshire, the result of a standoff in which the Democratic National Convention insisted that South Carolina would be the first in the nation Democratic primary. Yet the Granite State is moving forward with the party primary anyways, as it should, because it's in their state constitution. So voters will have to write his name on their ballot, or they can vote for Dean Phillips or Marianne Williamson. Of course, I'm a Marianne Williamson supporter. Unaffiliated voters also have the option of casting a ballot in either primary. I hope he loses, and I hope he loses by quite a lot. My thing is, though, speaking of Iowa, one of the discussions that has been popular is, so Vivek Ramaswamy visited all 99 counties of Iowa, held rallies, et cetera. Ron DeSantis did quite a lot, if not the same amount, but Nikki Haley didn't do as much, and Donald Trump did the least. So my question to you is, people are saying, is retail politics dead? Because despite Vivek Ramaswamy having like internet presence, he did all the circuits, he did everything, you know, in terms of reaching the voters and touching the hands and all that stuff, it wasn't enough to get him past 8%. Meanwhile, Donald Trump and Nikki Haley, you know, they barely campaign in the state, and look at their outcome.
It's a really good question. I, full disclosure, I also had to look up what retail politics meant. So Oxford, quoting the dictionary here, defines retail politics as a style of political campaigning in which the candidate attends local events in order to target voters on a small scale or individual basis. I remember when I lived in Iowa, door knocking for local candidates who, he happened to be a professor at my college, Dave Loebsack, who ended up getting elected as a state, as a representative to Congress. Yeah. And then I remember being able to talk about like Obama and Clinton and the different candidates who were running back in 2008. And so I remember having like face-to-face conversations with people. I remember attending like small local events like the Harkins Steak Fry, which was a big event hosted by a politician there, and where like it was face-to-face, and that was, it was really fun and it felt really personal. I would love to get back to that. I don't know if we have that. And I think in general, it's more related to like the lack of third places in the country. And by that, I mean like somewhere to go other than like work and home. And so like we're missing a lot of community centers. And so I think that there's a desperate need and a desire for that human connection and in those places like that. So I would love to see retail politics make a resurgence. And I think that that's something that grassroots activists really understand, is that like, I know these people in real life. I know they have my back. I don't necessarily know who's supporting me on the internet. Is this just a bot? Is this a troll? Is this an actual supporter? Is this an actual antagonist? Yeah, I would love to get back to that. I think that there could be a desire for it.
Yeah, a politician who had run previously said, listen, even in person, she said, if somebody says maybe they'll vote for, I'm thinking, considering, they're not voting for you. And even the people who do tell you they're voting for you, count half of that. And that's probably he's showing up. And I agree with you, because for me, and it's something we've talked about before, I hate the fact that everything is so nationalized that you don't have to have a platform. You don't have to have beliefs. You don't have to talk. Is, are you Democrat? Are you Republican? Because if you're Republican, the only issue is, do you or do you not support Donald Trump? If you're a Democrat, the only issue is, do you hate Donald Trump? And the fact that we have allowed Trump to, for all intents and purposes, become like this cancerous concept through which all of our politics are impacted. It's like, you don't have, like, the Democrats literally aren't offering anything. Because here you go, protect abortion rights. They're not talking about codifying Roe. They're just saying protect them. And people are doing that at the state level.
They're fundraising it off of it, though.
Absolutely. Like, if they were to lose, do you know how much money in fundraising they got when Trump was in office? It was astronomical. And at the end of the day, most of these people are very, very wealthy, and they benefit from the tax cuts and stuff that Donald Trump does. It was kind of like when the dog catches the car, Democrats didn't know what to do leading. They actually had to do something. And so they had to figure out, well, what excuses can we come up with now? And to me, that, I'm like, I can't look at anybody and say like, oh, vote for them because it's going to make your life better. And of course, Republican, what did we say the other day? Like, Democrats don't deserve to win. Republicans don't deserve to win, but Democrats deserve to lose. And that's essentially the campaign style that they're running. Like, I can't explain to you the phenomenon of Donald Trump, because that's not my cup of tea, and I see through it as him as a charlatan, but I could not pretend as if he does not have a massive level of influence on a particular group of people who are energetic and they are fervent supporters of him. Because I was like, it's not policy, because when you look at Nikki Haley and a lot of the voters in the exit polls who say like, oh, they're very conservative and they want conservative principles, Nikki Haley, by all accounts, is way more conservative than Donald Trump. But those people still voted for Trump.
Yeah.
So it's not about anything other than vibes and fairy dust now and the strong man appeal, which I think is actually a sign of weakness. But anyways.
Yeah. So what I think is interesting about this is that whoever ends up being our nominees, one of these people will become our next commander in chief overseeing the military. And I did some math the other day about the military budget in 2024. So the military budget, the U.S. military budget in 2024 is going to be $831.781 billion. I work with numbers for a living, and you would never know it based on the way I just said this. $831.781 billion. Then, if you look at what the U.S. Census Bureau predicts the U.S. population to be in 2024, 335,893,238 people. So almost 336 million people. If you divide the military budget by the number of people, it gives you $2,476.32 per person for the year. If we were to spend that money that we were spending on the military for us individually, that breaks down to $206.36 a month. What would you do, or what would you like to do with an extra $206 a month?
Listen, I would like to breathe a sigh of relief when it comes to like my bills and like making, just having some wiggle room. Like as a student right now, you know, I've adjusted my working. So it's like, I'm not making the same money that I was when I was a full-time worker. So that would be nice. Listen, it'll cover a bill or two. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I mean, we saw what happened during COVID when people were getting the additional $600 during COVID with the unemployment benefits. And we saw the dramatic way that that improved the lives of everyday people. We saw credit card debt going down. We saw people being able to feed their children. Poverty was going down when they did child poverty went down with like 50% when they were able to do the child tax credit. So to me, like, it's something we always say, a lot of people's problems will be fixed with money. Like, it's not complicated what people do, but you know, people use the boogeyman of, oh, they're just going to be spending drugs and all of this stuff, buying drugs. And it's like, one, the data never really bears that out. It's genuinely a very small slither. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to impede on the overwhelming benefit of people doing better and thriving in life because of a small slither of people that could be addressed in a different light. And at the end of the day, it's also whether we like it or not what they do, they have the right to do it, as long as they're not hurting other people. And I don't know. This is, sometimes you feel like you're in like a madhouse, because it's like so much of the solutions and so many of the issues are obvious.
Yeah.
And many of the solutions are darn near obvious as well. But saying them in political spaces, they look at you like you're speaking a long forgotten and lost language.
Yeah. I think about that too, as just a family of one plus a cat. I could feed myself for the entire month probably with groceries on $200 a month. That would be great. I personally think that like we should have like a universal SNAP program where like every single person in the country gets a SNAP card so that they can afford to go buy groceries. Like that doesn't, I don't think that that's a radical concept. That everybody should be able to eat in the wealthiest country in the history of the world. I also know that like food bank usage has increased pretty dramatically since the pandemic, like since the height of the pandemic. And so you're right. It was like when the U.S. government was, quote unquote, printing money, they were just generating some numbers on a screen, doing the calculation, because our money's not backed in gold or anything anymore. They were just running up some numbers, but they were distributing those numbers to the people living in this country, and it made our lives better. So, yeah, I think that's interesting. Speaking of making your life better, I am curious, would you rather be rich or would you rather be famous? I saw this question posed to me the other day and I was like, ooh, I know what I would be, but I want to know what you would say.
This is challenging because I'm going to talk out loud my process. So my impulse, given my love for entertainment, was to say famous. However, being famous comes with a lot of responsibility and expectation when it comes to your financial well-being and ability to upkeep said lifestyle. And we've seen countless examples of what happens when you can't. And whether it be MC Hammer or, you know, TLC going bankrupt, Toni Braxton going bankrupt, it ends up tainting your brand to such a large degree. So part of me is like, I think being rich would be better because that will ensure financial stability, which then gives me freedom and time to which I could do work potentially to become, you know, famous, et cetera. And nevertheless, I think it would be better to be rich and anonymous than to be famous and flailing financially. But I don't know. That's a great question. I can see both. What about you? I'm curious.
Thank you. So in the words of you that you told me one time when I was living in my delusion and I said, am I famous? Am I a star? And you said, you were very polite and you said, everybody's famous in somebody's world.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, that's a really polite way. It was very nice. Thank you. Because I think Day is famous. Everybody listening. He right. is. Go roll the tapes. He's got credits. He has an IMDb page. I would rather be famous, to be honest. As I'm like, I was looking at some numbers the other day and I was like, my income, full disclosure, is like $1,000 more than annually than like what's considered low income in the city and county of Denver. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm really happy and I'm able to like meet all of my basic needs because I live a relatively anti-capitalist lifestyle. I don't have an Amazon Prime membership. I don't have any sort of subscriptions. I my friends who have it, like lend me their passwords and I'm appreciative of it. But I spend a lot of time out in like the real world, or I utilize a lot of free resources like the public library. If I want to like access books or audiobooks or like they have tickets to events. Like they have all sorts of really cool things at the library that are free. And so I'm like, I've been trying to utilize a lot more resources. And so I was like, I struggle with identifying as like, quote unquote, poor, but on like paper in terms of income, I'm pretty close to it. And so, but I was like, I also still feel like I'm able to address most of my basic needs.
Yeah.
Because it's also just me. Like, I'm also only having to support myself. And so for me, the power and responsibility that you talked about with fame, I think is something that, like, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think RuPaul says that. And maybe somebody else said it. But I was like, I had a friend tell me the other day, too, that I thought that was good. She was quoting somebody else who was quoting somebody else that said, with uncertainty comes possibility. I really liked that. Yeah, it was good. But yeah, I was like, I think that I know that there would be a lot of power that came with like the limelight or stardom or celebrity. And I see so many of these people who have fame, but who have come out in support of Israel and in support of, like, honestly, in support of genocide, really, who are going over and visiting and like signing their names on missiles. And I'm like,
that was insane.
It's gross. And I was like, to me, I'm like, if you are going to have this level of notoriety and fame, I think that there should be some some kind of expectations on how that power needs to be yielded. And so I don't know. I was like, I feel like the more I think through about like what I believe and the causes that I stand for, I feel like I could utilize and wield some of that power responsibly to like, hopefully like uplift more people than just myself. So I'm like, literally, it was like for me at this point too, because I'm like, I am lucky. I am really lucky. Don't get me wrong, that my basic needs are being met. I have food. I have shelter. My basic physiological needs are met. I feel safe where I live. I have a community of people around me that love and support me. Like, I know that not everyone has that.
Yeah.
And I also think too, like on paper too, it's just a number. And I'm like, I'm able to address my basic needs with that. And so I was like, I would love to grow in power and influence. So for me, it was for me, it's fame. But what I think has been really interesting is so many of many Black women who are actors like Monique and Taraji P. Henson lately speaking out about pay equity in the entertainment industry. And so like, you look too and you see that so many of these systemic issues are they're everywhere. And so I'm really proud of them for speaking up and advocating for their value and their worth, and they should be paid more. So that's why I'm happy to see people like banding together with solidarity and economic solidarity. If you are a W-2 worker, you are working class.
Yes.
Regardless of how much money you make, you are working class. There should be some economic solidarity in that we are all workers and cogs. So
I agree. It's funny you mentioned them, because I think subconsciously that was my fear, is that like, the wealthier, the more famous you are, there are responsibilities and things that you have to pay for. Yeah, there are things you can leverage. You can get free clothes. You can do a ton of things like free, but you need security. If you can't fly coach anymore because it's a hassle, then you might need, you know, private jet. I don't know if everybody really needs that. And, you know, that's the whole climate issue. But like, there are just things you have people on, like people like Taraji is like, you have lawyers, because now you're doing brand endorsements. So you have lawyers, you have agents, you have managers, you have makeup people, you have stylists, you have personal assistants. So personal assistants. And it's like, to be socially rich and materially poor, I think the reason why I have such a fear of that is because I feel a responsibility not just to the people that I would hope to be able to employ, because that's always been something I'd want to be able to bless other people to be in good situations, but also to my descendants, ancestors, like my descendants, like my nieces, my nephews, my family, and making sure that I can make it a little bit easier on the next generation. So it's a very interesting conversation. And I think that the question really can go either way, because there's no wrong answer to it. It's just like, what's your goal, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. That's really interesting to think about. So yeah, no, I liked that. You know what? I think that's probably a great place to wrap up for today. I really enjoyed this conversation. You know, if you enjoyed this conversation, you can support us by giving us 5 stars on the podcast platform of choice. If you listen on Spotify, we would love 5 stars if you have not rated us 5 stars there. You can give us a follow over on Instagram and Twitter, primarily. We have a TikTok and Threads, but Instagram and Twitter, @CallMeLimboPod. We love to hear from you. We are also going to start leaning in a little bit more to some self-sufficiency guests, leaning in more to producing some more content this year. And we can't do that without your financial support. So if you are a financial supporter, we thank you from the bottom of our heart.
Yes.
If you would like to become a founding member of Call Me Limbo,
yeah,
you can go on over to Patreon and click the Just the Tip button and become a member for $4.69 a month. We also accept one-time donations and contributions on Venmo and Cash App. So thank you. Your support keeps us going.
We have cool perks. We have cool tiers. We have cool perks for joining the Call Me Limbo family. You'll be a friend of Phoebe and all that fun stuff.
That's right. Yeah. You know what's funny is, speaking of Phoebe, I was actually listening to our promo that we did. When we started this, after it was basically our second episode, it was when we were still Limbo and Yimby. And then we're like, you know what? Let's introduce ourselves as who we actually are. And so we did this promo and it said, we actually have a third member of our team, Phoebe, who's our president. And I was like, yes. Yeah. So I was like, you're going to start seeing more of Phoebe and hearing more from Phoebe. And so she's got a lot of one-liners, and you know, I do too. And you know, like I always say, Day, say this all the time, my presence is my gift.
I like that, though. You know what's
funny?
Thank you. Y'all, David, my favorite part about this is that I don't hear, he never says these, first of all, but he doesn't tell me beforehand, so I'm always bracing myself for what's to come. But sometimes he stumbles on ones like that. I like that one.
Thank you. I've got a whole book of them. So we've got at least another 100 episodes to go before I can get through all these one-liners.
I'm excited. Well, y'all, thank you so much for listening. And as always, remember, when they go low, we go to hell. So call me.
Limbo.
Bye.